The Holy Gospel according to Luke, the 16th chapter. Then Jesus said to the disciples, "There was a rich man who had a manager, and charges were brought to him that this man was squandering his property. So he summoned him and said to him, 'What is this that I hear about you? Give me an accounting of your management, because you cannot be my manager any longer.' And the manager said to himself, 'Well, what will I do now that my master is taking the position away from me? I am not strong enough to dig, and I am ashamed to beg. I have decided what to do so that when I am dismissed as manager, people may welcome me into their homes.' So summoning his master's debtors one by one, he asked the first, 'How much do you owe my master?' He answered, 100 jugs of olive oil. He said to him, 'Take your bill, sit down quickly, and make it 50. Then he asked another, "And how much do you owe?" He replied, 100 containers of wheat. He said to him, "Take your bill and make it 80. And his master commended the dishonest manager because he had acted shrewdly. For the children of this age are more shrewd in dealing with their own generation than are the children of light. And I tell you, make friends for yourselves by means of dishonest wealth, so that when it is gone, they may welcome you into the eternal homes. Whoever is faithful in a very little is faithful also in much, and whoever is dishonest in a very little is dishonest also in much. If, then, you have not been faithful with the dishonest wealth, who will entrust to you the true riches? And if you have not been faithful with what belongs to another, who will give you what is your own? No slave can serve two masters, for a slave will either hate the one and love the other, or be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth." The Gospel of the Lord. One of the first lessons you learn in preaching class in seminary is to never open a sermon by whining about the scripture passage you are about to preach on. There are all sorts of reasons for this rule. One is that the goal of a sermon introduction is to engage the listeners, to capture the attention of the folks in the pews, not to make them feel sorry for the guy or gal in the pulpit. Another reason is that it's a bit weird to start off a sermon by complaining to worshipers about how horrible a Bible text is, how it doesn't make any sense, and then ask them to listen to you talk about it for the next 11 minutes or so. That being said, our monthly Lutheran clergy meetings resumed this past Thursday after a summer break, and pretty much everyone there was lamenting having to preach today. Scholars have referred to the verses I just read from the Gospel of Luke as, quote, "Jesus' most confusing parable, one of the strangest of the strange, and the most difficult parable of them all." Yay. So let's begin by making sure we understand the story that Jesus tells. The main character is a manager, the guy doing the day-to-day work of taking care of his rich boss's property. Based on what we know about how things worked back then, our manager's job would include supervising other workers and servants, making arrangements with contractors and suppliers, ensuring that the people and animals entrusted to his care are fed and sheltered, and generally looking out for his boss's best interests. But something has gone wrong. People have approached the manager's rich boss to tell on the manager. We have no idea who complained or whether their accusations were even true. All we hear is that the manager is called on the carpet, told to provide an accounting of what he has been doing, and has a bit of an oh crud moment when he realizes he's going to lose his job. Notice that our manager does not try to defend himself. He doesn't say he's been unjustly accused, doesn't make excuses, doesn't beg for the chance to make things right or anything. He simply steps back and ponders his next move. What to do, what to do, what to do? I'm not strong enough for manual labor. I'm sure not gonna lower myself to beg on a street corner. I know. I can grease the wheels a bit here, get a little quid pro quo going so that when I do get canned, I've got me some friends out there. And so our manager sets his plan in motion. He summons the people who owe debts to his master, and then he negotiates some major discounts on their debts. In some cases, 20%. In other cases, a whole 50% off what is owed to his master. Our dear manager is indeed setting himself up for the future. Contra that old Beatles song, "Can't Buy Me Love," it seems you can, and our manager is. And he's not even spending his own money to do it. He's spending the money of his master, the very guy he's in trouble with. Now, if this story was used as a hypothetical in an ethics class in college or business school, students would discuss the manager's bad behavior and what crimes he's guilty of. They'd identify which regulatory agencies would get involved, what civil and criminal penalties would be likely, whether the accounting practices of his rich boss might be investigated as well. Students would argue about whether it's ever right to steal from someone, like to feed your starving children. Perhaps explore the old "the ends justify the means" theory. But of course, we aren't hearing this story in an ethics class. We are hearing it from Jesus. Jesus has decided to blow our minds. Instead of the ending we'd predict and expect, we hear that the rich boss in our story commends his dishonest manager for acting shrewdly. And then Jesus goes on to tell us that we are to make friends for ourselves by means of dishonest wealth, so that when it is gone, they may welcome us into the eternal homes. Right. So if you think I'm now going to be able to explain to you what all of that means, you are going to be very disappointed. I can tell you that biblical scholars have turned themselves inside out, trying to come up with interpretations of this story to make it more palatable, like by speculating that the dishonest manager didn't really cheat his rich boss out of money. He was actually eliminating his own commission from the transactions. Most of those interpretations don't fit with what Jesus actually says as he tells the parable, and they are just too forced. So I'm going to suggest that we just try to live with this parable as another example of God's very peculiar arithmetic, God's very strange way of writing relationships that have been distorted somehow. I do think we should picture Jesus telling this parable with a smile on his face. He knows the Pharisees are listening as he is speaking to his disciples. And in the verse right after where our gospel lesson ends today, we hear that the Pharisees ridicule Jesus for what he has just said. But isn't that maybe what Jesus is going for here? trying to get people riled up, to make them throw their hands in the air and say, "This is crazy, I just give up." Yet maybe that's what Jesus is going for, to make us give up. Give up our view of how things should work and open ourselves to God's way. God's way is the way of a shepherd who leaves 99 sheep behind in the wilderness to go after one who is lost. That's the story we heard last Sunday. God's way is the way of a father who welcomes his prodigal son home with open arms and a party, even after all that has happened. God's way is the way of a landowner who pays a full day's wage to the people who work all day in the vineyard, and to the people who work half a day, and to the people who work only an hour. God's way is to forgive not 7 times, but 77. God's way is to take the last one in line and make her first, and make the first last. This is God's way of doing the math. It may seem strange to us, it may even seem quite unfair, but thank goodness for that. If things were fair, if we got what we deserved, we'd be in trouble. For we are the lost sheep God risks everything to find. We are the prodigal welcomed home with no questions asked. We are the laborer welcomed, rewarded with a whole day's pay, even though we only picked a few grapes. We are the debtor who is called in and told we have been freed from what we owe. We are the one in the back of the line who all of a sudden gets the VIP treatment. So my pastoral advice for today, don't try to understand this divine holy grace. Just celebrate it. Be glad, as someone once said, that God indeed does dispense gifts and not wages. I know I am glad for that.